Hey folks, it's Hannes Finney. Thank you for supporting Storyworthy. Not only the people who actually give us money, but the people who give us thanks. Sometimes you go on Twitter and you say, I like at Storyworthy. That's all it takes. Thank you.
Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hey guys, it's Henry Phillips, and I'm drinking my fucking coffee right now, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the grounds of Summerfest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the world's largest music festival.
This is like the 44th time we've come from Summerfest.
But this time we have a really good excuse.
Why?
Because our topic today is the opening act.
Okay, the opening
act. And I opened for Robert Klein at Summerfest in the year...
Now, what stage were you on exactly?
The comedy stage.
How many comedy stages were there at that time?
One. It's a music festival that has one comedy stage. It's got like 8 to 10 music stages, various genres. And then, so what they did is in the old days, they had like a big amphitheater where I once saw the Allman Brothers. Yeah, you heard me. And then next to it, for some reason, next to the big amphitheater was the comedy stage. And so I'm watching Jay Leno there once. I know the names are dropping like flies. And he's talking, hey, what about Wonder Bread? And all of a sudden, Eric Clapton starts his show. It's about 100 feet. And it's like, down, down, down. Jay Leno's like, what is it? I don't know if you can hear me. It was completely insane. So then they tore down the old amphitheater, built a brand new amphitheater, which they turned around because it's on Lake Michigan, the whole thing, so that the sound would go out over Lake Michigan and not into the city. So it wouldn't bother anybody. Brilliant. And they took the comedy stage and moved it. Now it's next to this thing. It's like they hate comedy. This is what I'm saying.
Okay, so how'd the gig go?
The gig went fine. I wrote for Robert Klein, by which I mean I was one of six comics who were on before Robert Klein was on, but I say I opened for Robert Klein.
You didn't open for him.
I did.
You were on a show that he was on.
I was before him.
Did you meet him?
No. Ugh. Listen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is show business. We got to do what we got to do.
We're talking about the opening act tonight because we have the one and only Henry Phillips. Henry Phillips is here and he brings forth the topic, the opening act. That makes me think that he was the opening act for somebody.
Yes.
And something went good or it went very bad. I don't know which.
Yeah. We're hoping it went really bad because if it went well, that's a story that's not entertaining at all.
But it could be.
No, I want disaster stories all the time.
Here's the really good news. I've known Henry for many, many years, but I don't know. We haven't really connected before. I mean, we have, and we've been on the same show together. Yeah. Top Tune. But here's the good news. As you know, Hannes, I do what they call pre-production. Have you ever heard of that?
Never heard of it.
I thought so. The point is, I've been looking into Henry Phillips, and I have been literally peeing my pants just a little bit.
Right. What I like is that you're naturally a stalker of everyone on the show, but you cover it by the term pre-production. you're like, who is this outside my window? I'm doing pre-production.
Specifically, Henry has this show on YouTube. You can watch Henry's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And it's so funny on so many levels. But one of the things I like about it so much is like, I can relate. Like, I know it's all supposed to be funny, but a lot of that's how I cook.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I substitute. Like, if I don't have vanilla... Well, just put in some maple syrup because they're the same color.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's not even close to being the proper thing to do.
Let me tell you the good news. I just got a cookbook called The 5-Ingredient Cookbook from Trader Joe's. So it's all ingredients from Trader Joe's. And for the most part, I already have all those ingredients because I do a lot of grocery shopping. Thinking that'll lead to meals.
Yeah.
I don't.
People need to understand, and longtime listeners know, you cannot cook. No, Hannes, you can't cook.
I have this new cookbook, and here's the good news. I don't even
Did
have to
Did you bread it and fry it? Because that's the only way.
I don't even have to go shopping because, like I said, I have all the... Because it's 5 ingredients from Trader Joe's. So it's 5 things from Trader Joe's, and you put them together, ba-boom. Something comes out.
Actually, the other day I made for the wife. That's how I like to talk now. Like it's 1953. You know, the wife and I went down to the shore. God. And
How long do we have to celebrate your marriage?
Twice as long as you berated me for being engaged for a long time.
That would be 14 years.
14 years. You're going to, and we're going to talk about it as if I just got married. So I actually, she was like, I want to make this Parmesan chicken. I'm too tired. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make it. But I had to bring my laptop into the kitchen so I could follow every instruction.
Yeah.
And then it was delicious and marvelous, and I felt
unusual.
like quite a man.
It's not unusual.
It's unusual for me
Here's
to do it.
Here's what you should do. Anytime you're cooking, when you look up the recipe, start it by saying simple. So let's say you want to make meatloaf. Then look for simple meatloaf. You know what I'm saying? Or if you look at, let's say you want to make...
I think something that simple people eat.
If you want to make lasagna, you type in simple lasagna. Always start with, and then that way the recipe comes up, you know, the least complicated.
Okay. All right. By the way, your idea of cooking is you have a box of Cheez-Its you brought with us today. It's part of our craft services. It's Duoz, D-U-O-Z.
This is actually...
Both sharp cheddar and Parmesan.
I used to eat out of vending machines, right?
Yeah.
Like in college and when I was 1,000 fucking years ago and I was like a lifeguard, right? I remember specifically working at this one pool and I would eat meals out of the vending machine, but here's how I would do it in my head. Like the peanut butter cheese crackers... That was my protein right there. And then I would have like Starburst fruit pack. That's the fruit. Then I would have Gobstoppers in green. That's a vegetable. And I have a pack of gum. My point is like I wasn't taught.
You were allowed to have a child? This is horrifying.
How to eat. Hey, I cook really well for her. You ought to see.
No. I know.
I buy a lot of groceries.
All she does is use everything for a ketchup conveyor. That's it.
All right, you guys, let's get on with the story. I would enjoy the story.
I want to hear it.
But before Henry Phillips comes on, I did want to remind you guys that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, the easiest thing you can do is be kind.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I have no idea how to be kind. What are you talking about?
Hey, what did you do this morning? Oh, you know, actually, I got up. I was listening to Storyworthy. And, what's Storyworthy? Oh, it's just the show I listen to. It's fun. It's under an hour. It's always uplifting. Good news. It's all fun.
Sure. If you're on the Twitter, just throw on, hey, here's one of my favorite podcasts, at Storyworthy.
There you go.
Somebody did that, and they included it. And somehow Lucinda Williams became involved in this chain, which was one of your favorite singers.
She is one of my favorite singers.
It's like,
It's all meant to be.
Just tell people.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around, because Henry Phillips is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have comedian Ed Krasnick.
And I'll be talking about a hell gig and what I did for stand-up.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
This is Adam Carolla, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Back, we've left the Summerfest grounds and we're now on the grounds of the Milwaukee Art Museum. It's a beautiful place overlooking Lake Michigan. We're going to go to the vending machine right now in the basement. I used to go to the vending machine actually in the basement of the Milwaukee Art Museum and get ice cream bars, and it was that old machine with the conveyor belt.
Yeah, and they slid down.
With like it would slide up. Like you could see the thing coming up into the slot that you could reach in. And you pull it out. And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
Vending machines have changed, haven't they?
They're way too complicated. Now
you can use a whole show on
those. You can use a credit card in your vending machine. It's like America's gone right to the shitter.
Right,
I made quite a leap there, but I think you can follow me.
Henry Phillips is here right now. He's a comedian and a musician, and he has some of, like I said, the funniest YouTube content I've ever seen, including Henry's Kitchen and You and Your Fucking Coffee. And Henry has appeared on Jimmy Kimmel Live, the Dr. Demento radio show, and podcasts like WTF with Marc Maron and Comedy Bang Bang. Now, his semi-biographical comedy film, Punching the Clown, which I watched for 99 cents on Amazon.
And there you go.
You can too. It received the audience
award. What a world we live in today.
It received the audience award at Slam Dance Film Festival.
Nice.
And it, like I said, it's available on Hulu, I believe, and also on, you just go on Amazon. You can also find Henry Phillips over at YouTube and on his website, henryphillips.com, and on Twitter at Henlips, which, by the way, that's a fantastic Twitter name. Am I right?
Henlips.
Henlips.
That really does sound like, why was that not taken by Foster Farms before you got to it?
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Henry Phillips.
Hey, thanks, everybody. Good to be here. Good to see you guys again. So this story, I've told the story a lot, mostly at bars with inebriation involved. And I actually wrote it down because I was nervous about telling it and missing something. But I've never told it while looking at it, so I hope this is better. But I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, yeah, should we just jump right into it? Okay. And by the way, it's not really about being the opening act. The show actually went fine. It's about what happened afterward. But and the story really is the same one as the Eric Clapton, Robert Klein. So you kind of screwed me here. I have nothing. No, I'm kidding. I was on that same show. All right. So I was booked to be the opening act for a young comedian who had just gotten a huge break and was on TV and suddenly was doing really well with college audiences. And we did a show in, let's just call it, I'm not going to name names or places here because I don't want anybody to put it together just in case anybody gets upset. But let's just say it was any town, Midwest, USA. And the show went decent. For me, it was pretty clear that I wasn't the person that they were there to see. And then the headliner went on. Killed, absolutely killed. Afterward, after the show, it was time to go party. And I met a girl. We're going to call her, I'm going to assign names. The headliner, let's call him Randy. All right. And it's not Randy anybody, if anybody's thinking that. And I met this girl after the show. We're going to call her Paula. Because her name was Paula. That's what was her actual name. I don't know her, so it doesn't matter. All right. Anyway, she told me that her date had actually left during the show for whatever reason. They got in an argument and was wondering if it was okay if she could hang out with me. And I was like, yeah, of course. And in retrospect, I think that what she really wanted was to hang out with Randy and his whole posse or whatever. But Randy, who had a little bit of an entourage with him, invited us all to go out drinking. And the girl that I was with, Paula, didn't drink, but she was happy to come hang out, you know, with the whole crew. So we show up to this bar, and the first thing that happens is we're in the parking lot, and Randy's already a little bit buzzed at this point. And there were some people waiting. It was one of those parking lots where you have to, like, roll up the money and put it in a slot. There's no parking attendant, which I always thought was kind of weird because you have to have the exact amount of money. And the amount of money was $4. That's what they wanted for this parking lot. And Randy pulls out a 20 and is just like, well, you know, all I have is a 20. And then he asks this couple behind us who's older and was like, hey, do you guys have change? And they were like, no, but if you go into the bar, I'm sure they'll do it. And Randy, who again had just come into a lot of money, was like, ah, fuck it. And he just puts $20 in the slot. So I was a little embarrassed because I'm like, as if society doesn't already hate, you know, 23-year-old white males. We're seeing them literally throw away money. Like, he just put in more than three times as much money as he needed. And it was just sort of embarrassing. But, we all eventually go in and into the bar, and it's a pretty good time. There was absolutely no chemistry between Paula and I. At one point, I think she even told me that she didn't like my act, and I was trying to be defensive about it, and I was like, well, you know, I think that maybe a lot of girls don't like my act. And she goes, well, apparently guys don't either because my date left during your part of the show. And I was like, all right, well, this is going nowhere. Eventually Randy decides we should go to another bar, and he says for us all to meet in the parking lot in like 10 minutes, and we're all in the parking lot and none of us could find him. So we're waiting for a bit, and the last time that we saw him, he was definitely getting pretty drunk. So eventually my phone rings, and it's an unknown number, but it's the area code of that place that we were. And I'm kind of confused. And I answered, and it was Randy. And he was like, "Hey, where are you guys?" And I was like, "We're in the parking lot. That's where we said we were going to be." And he's like, "Oh, okay, crap. I'm out in the front entrance. I'll be right there." And I was like, "Well, whose phone is this?" And he says, "I lost my phone, so I'm using some girl's phone." So a little bit later, Randy eventually would tell us that he had lost his phone, and he saw a girl out in the front talking on the phone, and he asked her if he could use her phone, and she not only said no, but she was actually kind of mean about it. So he said, at that point, he said, "I'm going to give you $100 if I can use your phone." Again, he just came into a lot of money. It doesn't mean anything to him. And she was like, "I got to go." And then she hung up and then gave him the phone. And so we didn't really believe that story, but we went with it. Okay. It was funny. And that's something that we were laughing about, that anybody would pay $100 to use somebody's phone. So anyway, we all go to the next bar, which is only two blocks away. Paula and I walked over there. The gang drove, and they beat us there. And when we got there, the bar was empty, but we could hear all this activity going on in the patio. And so Paula went into the back, and I went to get a beer. And I was talking to the bartender, and I gave him my ID. He wanted my ID, and he looked at it, and he goes, "Oh, wow, we have the exact same birthday." And I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And he goes, "Same year and everything." And then we had this, it was like the one time of the night that I felt like I was actually bonding with somebody. I was like, wow, the same year and everything. We're actually like, we were born, we've been alive for the same amount of time. Like, we probably watched the same cartoons. We lived through the same presidencies. We know all the same music. And we chatted for a little bit, and it was pretty cool. All of a sudden, I hear a bottle breaking out on the patio. And I was like, "Oh, man, I guess that's probably, I'm embarrassed. That's probably my friends, you know, because they're a little bit drunk." And the bartender just smiles, and he's like, "Hey, yeah, it's no problem. That's what bars are for, right? I'll go get the mop." So I follow the bartender back to the patio area, and this is the sight that we see. It's a big pile of broken glass in the middle of the patio. Randy is peeing on it, and there's a couple of guys taking pint glasses and throwing them in the pile and breaking glass. And the bartender that I just had this whole bonding experience with was just like, he's like, he's seeing a plane crash or something. He can't even imagine. He's like, "What the hell is going on?" It's like, he was expecting, oh, maybe somebody dropped a glass and a little bit of it spilled. And he was not expecting this. So he was shouting at the top of his lungs. Paula took off. I think she was gone for the night at that point. And, he was yelling at us all to get out, including me. And I was like, "Oh, man, but we had that thing. I don't know these people." So at this point, we do want to go to keep the night going. You know, Paula was long gone, but I was like, whatever. And there was this issue of where do we go now? But all the bars were closed by this point. But you know, Randy and everybody wanted to still stay out drinking. So the plan that they came up with is they were going to give somebody $200. One of the people in our group was going to get $200 to go into a 7-Eleven and buy two cases of beer and basically bribe them to sell it after hours. And the guy that we chose, let's call him Josh. That's not his name, but Josh, was the obvious choice because Josh had been telling us about how when he was in high school, his dad owned a Bible store, and he used to make Josh and his brother go to the high school football games and sell Bibles to the kids. And so we were like, "Well, you're clearly," and he would sell Bibles. So it's like, "You're clearly the best salesman of the group. Like, if you can sell Bibles to your peers on a Friday night at a football game, you could definitely get two cases of beer for $200. So he went in there, and we're all waiting for him to get out, and he comes out and he goes, "All right, here's the deal." The guy said, no way. But there was a dude behind me who heard the whole conversation, and he said that he was going to give us two cases of beer for $200. He said he has it at his place. All we have to do is follow, and he lives right around the corner. This whole thing is within about a 4-block radius, you know? And so we're like, okay, cool. So we all go over to this guy's apartment, and we wait in the front while Josh goes inside to buy two cases of beer from this guy, like it's a drug deal or something. So they go in. he comes out and Josh has the two cases of beer and it's like, wow, this is a success. And then the idea is to go back to the hotel room and hang out and talk about the night. This girl was walking in at the time and she lives in the same apartment complex. And she asked the guy who just sold the beer, how's your night going? And he goes, I'd say it's going pretty damn good. Some guy just gave me $200 for two cases of beer. And the girl said, that is nothing. Some guy gave me $100 to use my cell phone. And that's the story of the crazy night that we had with the spendthrift.
Oh. All right. That comedian was Doug Stanhope.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I'll say, you know what, just to make it confusing to everybody, I'll say it's not impossible that it could be or that he was involved, but again, I'm not going to say who it was.
Doug Stanhope was 23, I don't think, was when he hit.
Yeah, I'll say this is quite some time ago.
Dave Attell.
No. But I'm not going to say who it is.
Wait, no, here's okay.
Because it's none of the.
Now you're not
going to
say the city, right?
Yeah,
you're not going to say the city. But like, what size city? It sounds like this was not like a big place. This is like no. But this is like
you guys are going to try to get this out. Oh yeah, yeah.
I literally can't imagine who it is.
I'll tell you a couple of things if people want to do. If you look at the names that I chose, with the exception of Paula. There is a logic to them, but you would have to know everything about
the amazing Randy.
Does this have to do with American Idol? Randy, Paula,
again,
is there a
Simon? I'm not saying anything.
Is there a Simon?
But I don't think
if you
this
look
story,
at the town, I'll tell you one thing. It wasn't a 7-Eleven. It was a different chain of stores.
Wawa.
A Piggly Wiggly?
Was it a Wawa?
A White Pantry?
No.
White Pantry.
It
was in Wisconsin, wasn't it?
A Come and Go.
No, but that would be more south.
No, Come and Go's are in Colorado.
Houston, that's the one I know.
This is also weird. It's like because it had to be like some kind of college town because or some state where you couldn't like he was trying to buy beer after hours.
There were a lot of college
kids. Wisconsin, there's no such thing as after hours, I don't think.
Oh, really? So you can go into like a 7-Eleven or whatever it is? I mean, but you can really buy beer after, because a lot of those places still have these old
laws.
Wisconsin was never, you know, she's from Pennsylvania and they're crazy with the state liquor stores.
In Pennsylvania, you can only buy alcohol between 10 and noon on
that's
Mondays, Wednesdays,
really
and Fridays.
Crazy.
That's completely.
Which is so silly, because all that means is that you're just going to buy it all then and then save it.
Well, you truly can't get a 6-pack in the state of Pennsylvania. You can only get a case of beer or a keg.
You used to be able to, actually you can. You can walk into a bar in Milwaukee, buy a 6-pack, and walk out with it.
No, you can buy I think you can buy a 6-pack in Pennsylvania. But let's say you wanted to buy.
Not from a bar, you can't.
Let's say, I think you can. But let's say you're insane and wanted to buy Mike's Hard Lemonade. Let's say it's me and I was home visiting my sister and I asked her what she wanted. And she says Mike's Hard Lemonade. You can't get 6 of those. You have to buy 24 of those.
Well, that's because you have to drink three times as many to get drunk.
How long would it take to drink 24 Mike's Hard Lemonade?
For your sister? About a minute.
I guess that's
She's an alcoholic with no taste.
I lived in Provo, Utah.
Yeah.
I went to BYU for one quarter.
Yeah.
Because I had, it's a long story, but I wasn't Mormon, but everybody else was.
Yeah.
So on Sunday, there was a big controversy because the Subway sandwiches... Technically, you're not allowed to have your business open on Sunday.
Yeah.
It's just against it's the Sabbath or whatever. So Subway was like, screw that. We're going to try to tempt people and have like really, really cheap food. We called it the Sabbath special on Sunday. And I was like a kid in a candy store because I wasn't. I wasn't of the belief that you couldn't patronize a business on Sunday. So I would go in there every Sunday and just like rack up on
get your meat on.
Yeah, just, like $2 sandwiches.
Well, you know, when Jesus came to America and went with the Indians.
That's right.
He said, hey, listen, thousands of years from now, when there is such a thing as business, don't do it on Sunday, which also doesn't exist yet.
So why did you go to Brigham Young University?
I had... Well, for one thing, they were about the only university that I applied to that accepted me.
What's a quarter? Isn't it like trimester?
Yeah, they were trimesters.
Uh-huh.
You're right. I eventually went to UCLA, which was on the quarter system, so I misspoke.
Well, no, but that seems like quite a jump, right? Brigham Young to UCLA?
Yeah.
No, they're about the same level. Yeah, they're both quality universities.
Yeah.
Brigham Young isn't a you know, it's a good place.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like when you're Sunday. but it was quite a culture shock because. Yeah, it's a very small town. It's tucked away. Even at one point, I did want to go buy alcohol, and I had to walk like 2 miles to find a place that sold alcohol. And even if you do resist your temptation to buy it, they actually have a law that it can only have like 1.5% or 2% of the alcohol.
Plus, you have to join like a club, right? You have to be sponsored.
Yeah, well, I was able to buy it publicly, but yeah, there's a law that says you can only have so much alcohol, which is really funny to me. So it's like, even if you decide to exercise your free will and go ahead and sin,
yeah,
we're going to still make it so it's impossible for you to sin too much.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
a safety net.
Well, you know, it's funny, though. I mean, because, like, your story just makes me realize, like, how, like, I'm not a drinker. So, like, I can't comprehend, like, going to that much trouble for beer. You guys were already in it, but they were already did a show. They were already in a bar. It's like, just go back to the hotel, and your hotel didn't have.
Yeah, but then what do you do at the hotel? You just kind of sit there.
But don't they have beer at a hotel? Or, you know?
Yeah, they probably had they probably stopped selling it at some point. There was probably a mini bar, but for all I know, that was probably already rated.
But Henry, you have to understand, Hannes never went through this period.
Yeah.
Hannes was born, and then he was 62 years old.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, I think that you're kind of trying to not let the fun times end, sort of, you know?
Exactly.
You want to keep it going.
Because don't you agree that the funnest times of the night are when you're, after you've actually had, you've slept a little bit, and then you wake up and you're still kind of drunk, and it's like a hangover laugh.
There's nothing about that sentence that sounds remotely fun to me. I cannot even imagine thinking of myself getting back out of bed and going, I want to get drunker. But you're reminding me because
I'm seeing two people. It's amazing.
You get ice cold Coca-Cola, and you get like
Coca-Cola. It's another thing you can't drink in Utah. It's Coca-Cola. No, but your story reminded me of Bill Kinison, Sam Kinison's brother, opened the first red club I regularly worked at Madison, Wisconsin. And so Sam Kinison was a headliner there. This is about a year before he became really famous.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're like taking Sam Kinison, who nobody knows who it is, to like college parties.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, if you can imagine, he's got like this marijuana, looks like fucking broccoli.
Oh,
it's like
wow.
This enormous stuff. And he's like rolling around on the ground, on the floor of somebody's house somewhere at some party, screaming, and they're like, what the why is this fucking old man rolling around?
That
like,
must have been a sight to see. Yeah.
Yeah, it was something to see. Even for a person who doesn't party, I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, well, I have hung out with Doug Stanhope quite a bit, and
I
would think that there's probably a little bit of similarity between those two in terms of a guy who conducts himself like a rock star, even if he's in a situation where nobody really, like, the only thing that's important to him is what's happening in his immediate surroundings.
I don't know Doug Stanhope, although I met him a couple of times. I was in a comedy class with his mom, Bonnie. Do you remember Bonnie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she was a great lady. She passed away some time ago, but she was an amazing
she was great.
Force. Right. And then he went on to do an entire documentary on her. And it's like he and his mom had like such a bond. I'd watch her. She would sit on stage and smoke.
He's more,
he'd
yeah.
smoke and she'd smoke together.
Oh,
on
yeah,
stage.
No, definitely. No, she was one. Well, he has a book about it. It's called Digging Up Mother.
It's a brand new
book that he just came out with.
Yeah, that's right. And he's got a pink suit on or something in the.
It's a wonderful. I mean, I know a lot of the story that it's about, but I haven't read.
So you grew up in New Jersey, and then you moved out here to LA. But so, what neighborhood did you grow up in?
In New Jersey?
No, here. In
oh,
LA.
Out here, La Crescenta.
Oh, in La Crescenta.
Yeah, which is kind of in a weird way, it's any town USA.
It is very
I would say I would make the statement that. Growing up in La Crescenta is a much less urban way to grow up than even if you grew up in like Indianapolis or I don't know about Madison, but certainly like Milwaukee or something. When I travel, when I tell people I grew up in LA, they're always just like picturing me like hanging
dodging gangs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, or just like, yeah, it's like this is basically, you know, most people, you know, work for their dad's, business selling Christmas
trees. It's very insular. You know? Yeah. La Crescenta is all in and of itself.
It's pretty much a regular joint. Yeah.
Yeah. No, La Crescenta is like picture perfect, beautiful. My daughter actually is in, her brownie troupe is in La Crescenta.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's like idyllic. I mean,
it's kind of Mayberry-ish.
It's a nice place. Yeah.
It's almost like you don't think it's real.
Yeah. You wouldn't see a piece of trash like for anything. It's just absolutely sparkling clean.
Yeah. Yeah,
and beautiful homes as well. So you grew up there. That's very normal. That's very normal. And your dad was an actor?
My dad was an actor, yeah. And he's still, well, he's still with us. He's basically retired. He wouldn't be against. He's in my, in the movie Punching the Clown. He's got a nice little part in that.
You know what? That didn't even occur to me.
Oh, yeah. He comes in as, he actually, my mom and my dad are in it. And my mom plays my dad's daughter.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's a lot younger than he is. But yeah, they come in and.
So Punching the Clown is kind of semi-autobiographical about you coming to LA. And who's the guy?
It's a lot of true stories, except for the. It's, I guess you could say it's sort of like Curb Your Enthusiasm in that he's playing himself, but they're basically reenacting funny things that are happening. It's not a documentary. Yeah.
You have a timing about you, Henry, that is so funny.
Oh, thanks.
Sort of like stuttered, right? And so you wait until you're just uncomfortable enough and then you land
there's
it.
There's a release.
Yeah, there's a release. It's very true. And so on YouTube, you've got all this really funny stuff.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about you and your fucking coffee.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this started from, there's a friend of mine in New York, Sarah Talamash, who is a very funny comedian in her own right. But we've been friends a long time, and I was crashing at her place when I went to New York, and then she would go crash at her boyfriend's place. So her roommates basically inherited a roommate that they never bargained for. That was me. And at one point, and I love coffee. I'm a huge coffee guy. I've already had 3 giant cups of coffee today. But I asked her if I could have some of the coffee, and she goes, yeah, of course. Have as much as you want. I don't care. And it was really good coffee. It was like gourmet, something really awesome, high-end New York stuff. And on about day 3, I was hanging out with Sarah out somewhere, and she looks at her cell phone. She's like, oh, wow, are you drinking all my roommate's coffee? And I was like, well, yeah, I think that you said that was fine. And she goes, yeah, I mean, I thought it was, but he just sent a message saying, you know, tell Henry to stop drinking my fucking coffee.
So
and I'm like, this is awful. Like, I didn't, you told me it was fine. And she just didn't know, you know, she just assumed it was fine. And also I was probably drinking way more.
Right. It was,
than
she didn't know how high end it was and you're drinking every
exactly.
bit of it.
Yeah. So anyway, that was awkward. And then another situation happened where I went to a friend of mine's place in New York, and he wasn't there. And his wife was there, and she said, do you want anything? Like, you know, can I, you know, you want a beer or like some water or Coke or whatever? And I was like, maybe some coffee. And then she kind of got this look on her face like, oh, fuck, I got to make this guy coffee now. And she's like, I don't really drink it, but I've got this stovetop like cappuccino maker thing that they gave us for our wedding gift. I could try to figure that out.
You put like directly on the burner.
Yeah. And in retrospect, I should have been like, you know, it's no problem.
Yeah,
you
don't
know?
Worry about
but instead,
it.
I was just like, sure, that sounds great. Anyway, apparently she mixed it up and did the grounds on the bottom or the water on the top or whatever the wrong way to do it was.
Yeah.
And the thing exploded. And all of a sudden, and I'm in the other room and I just hear, fuck. And I was like, what's going on? And there's a burn mark on the floor. There's like coffee grounds everywhere. There's like shattered pieces of metal and everything. And I was like, what's going on? It's like, and I was like, I don't think you don't have to make me coffee. And she's like, oh, there will be no fucking coffee. And she was really upset. And then, so I texted that, to Sarah Talamash, and that's when she came back and she said, you and your fucking coffee.
Yeah.
And, so we both thought that would be a great web series. And so that's what I did. I pitched it to Jash as a web series, just little vignettes about me and my coffee. And they're out there. There's 7 of them that you can watch on YouTube right now. And there's one to come.
And whose decision was it to make it look like a 70s movie of the week?
Oh, yeah. Well, because I guess part of the whole joke of it is how seriously we treat it, you know, like chronicles of this. Yeah. And so, yeah, there's this whole kind of Incredible Hulk. Remember the old show? I'm sure you remember.
Oh,
yeah.
God, no. Yes, I do.
With that piano, the Lonely Man's piano theme. And also, or there were so many shows. Like if you watch the early episodes of Columbo, there's a real darkness about him. You know, there's like a, yeah, exactly.
Head down.
The fugitive, that kind
of
thing.
So it's sort of the smash up of like, that's how seriously we're treating this whole thing. And yet the thing that we're talking about is so ridiculous.
And so every episode escalates to the point of absolute tragedy. And just when you think it's going to end, like the blind date one, when you're on this blind date, just when you think that it couldn't go worse, he leaves the door open in her apartment and her fucking cat walks out.
Yeah.
So
it's like now I'm the guy who fucks it up with the cat.
It sounds, you know, people think it's an exaggeration, but judging by your other two stories, that's the truth.
Oh,
you just walk into people's homes.
The one that you mentioned was an exact recreation of that, the cappuccino maker story.
Yeah. So do you, obviously you're trying to pack as many jokes in as you can.
Sure.
But who's getting like the final look at this thing, the final draft in terms of the cutting?
It's so wonderful. It's me. I don't have to take notes from anybody. Because when you work with Jash, which is an amazing company, I'm just like, so do you guys have anything on this? And they're like, no, it's great. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'd like to tweak this. And they're like, sure. And it's just wonderful. It's like anybody who's ever worked, you know, in something where somebody else paid for the production, it's very unusual. But they literally just let me make all the final calls.
Are you working in final cut, or what are you working in?
Well, they have an editor, and then I just sit with the editor.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Boy, that's brilliant.
Yeah, and there were different people. The last two were Nicholas Widener, and then the first one was Dan Fleshman. And actually, there's two of them that I edited myself on final cut.
Yeah.
The kitchen videos are iMovie. I just do them all on iMovie.
And that's a nice, easy program to use.
Yeah, it's really easy. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I can't use anything more sophisticated than that.
Well, Final Cut's more sophisticated than that.
No, I can't on the Henry's Kitchen, because then it starts to look too slick, you know?
I see,
iMovie limits you. Like, I don't know how you can make very specific types of cuts.
Yeah, no, sure it definitely is a more consumer-level program where it's more blanketed. It's not as specific.
Yeah, so I always have a little bit of extra space waiting before I talk.
Jash is the name of the...
It's a YouTube channel.
J-A-S-H.
Yeah, it's a company...
Do you direct these yourself, or
I'm the director.
Cool. And so one of my favorites is the one viewing your fucking coffee is with Rick Overton as the park ranger. And he spends his whole life looking and waiting for Bigfoot. And on the day that you visit the park ranger,
he can make some coffee.
He's just going to get you anything.
Yeah,
and you're in the middle of nowhere, so the last thing anybody should ask for is fucking coffee.
Yeah,
because there's nothing around for
and
miles.
Rick plays it great because he's got that. He's definitely a little bit upset, but he's such a nice guy.
Boy Scout ranger.
Make you some coffee, okay? And then, I see Bigfoot.
As he's gone, Bigfoot walks right in.
You can probably guess what's gonna happen.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then he comes out, and it's like, hey, what was that? And there's a big giant footprint there. And it's like, I don't know.
Well, I'm telling you.
Yeah, Rick was great.
Flipping hilarious.
No, Rick's amazing.
Right, the last two, I co-directed him with a guy named Dean Cundy, who's a friend of mine's dad that I grew up with. And he was the DP for Jurassic Park and Back to the Future. It's amazing. And
My God, are you kidding me?
I called him because I was like,
wait, the DP of Jurassic Park.
It's amazing.
Shot you and your fucking coffee.
Absolutely.
That's director of photography for you people out there.
Them, they look really good. And the thing is that
good.
I called him and I think that he just thought it sounded like a fun thing. He's like, I just was going to ask him for some tips on visual stuff because I had never really directed anything before except for my kitchen thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you want me to come to the set and just sort of, you know.
That is so cool,
oversee
man.
Everything? I was like, yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
That's a great story. That's a great
LA really,
story. But
really
you
got to
figure, these guys, they want to hang out and work and be in the creative environment.
Well, yeah, I think he likes being around film sets, you know, no matter what. That's what and I think I would like to think that I'll always want to be around that, or I'll always want to be around comedy. Even,
absolutely.
You know, when I'm a veteran of this stuff.
Especially when it's unique and original. And yeah. You and your fucking coffee is so freaking unique and so original.
I love that that's coming across. And I got to say, there were some funny things with Dean, actually, because when we were doing that one that you're talking about, the bit to do to have the cat walking out at the end mm-hmm. was sort of an afterthought. And at one point, the AD, for people that might not be familiar out there, the AD's job is to keep everything on time. And that one, there was only 3 hours to do this entire thing, which if you see it, it looks really great. There's all kinds of special effects, or there's just a bunch of technical stuff going on. And Dean was just never even slightly worried about mm-hmm. any of it. But the AD is like, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. It's like, and we were in the kitchen shooting, and then there was this... these two women that owned the cat that we were using for the day. And and the AD comes in and says, we were never going to be able to get this shot of the cat walking out the door because the girls have to leave, you know, at 5. We only have the cat till 5 p.m., you know.
The cat has a heart out.
Yeah, exactly. And Dean was just sort of like jokingly like, okay, now let's just a little background. Like Dean, I remember him telling me stories about being – in a helicopter with Steven Spielberg and flying around and doing a shot that's going to take all day to set up and getting complaints from the studio that they're like $1 million over budget and several days behind schedule. And everybody's not even yelling. It's that tense that they're just extremely quiet. And if one thing goes wrong on this thing, then they're going to have to do the whole thing again tomorrow. And it's just extremely tense.
Millions of dollars a day.
Yeah. So here's Dean trying to do this thing for fun. And the AD comes in freaking out. The cat's got to leave at 5 p.m. And Dean is like, oh, no, where are we ever going to get a shot of a cat walking out of a door? That sounds so... like that's so impossible to get. You know? It was just,
Did you end up getting...
We could never do that on some other day with some other
stray
door.
Cat will wander in,
Use that cat in the end? Was that the cat?
Well, all we did, here's what Dean did. We just grabbed the camera and put it on the floor and had me walk out like 10 times. And one of the times the cat followed me out and he's like, okay. Okay, let's go back to the kitchen now.
We got it.
Yeah, and it was just a lot of fun stuff like that.
So much fun.
I kind of, he was a little bit like, I equate him with, in Pulp Fiction, that the Harvey Keitel character who comes and does the cleanup. Yeah, that's sort of what Dean was. He was like, okay, let's do this, 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 and that. You go get some towels. You go do this and whatever. And it was just sort of like extreme... efficiency and experience. It was amazing.
Now, wait a minute. Have you used that AD again?
Oh, absolutely. And he's great at his job.
Because he was just nervous.
Oh, yeah. No, and he was doing his job, but it was just funny to watch. I think there is, and I'm learning all this stuff as I go, too, but I think that there's an inherent difference conflict of interest between the creative side and the AD, because the AD is just like, obviously, well, they'll say things like, you can do this, but you won't be able to do this. Just letting you know.
Yeah,
you know,
the light is here.
If you want to take an extra 15 minutes here, you can do it, but just want to let you know.
Because they're thinking ahead.
Because there are directors and people and creative people who will just pay no attention to the world around them and just be, and then will start yelling when they go outside and it's dark. It's like, where's the sunlight? It's like you spent 14 hours in the basement. So obviously the sun has gone down. You were talking about the Spielberg, and I thought you were going to go with the biggest set I was ever on, which was The Aviator with Martin Scorsese. And it's like everybody was so calm. Because, like, we got plenty of money, we got plenty of time, everything.
Oh, interesting.
But the fact that the studio could possibly complain to Steven Spielberg, it's not like Jurassic Park was his first hit. He's already a legend at the time he's making Jurassic Park, and they're like, you're spending too much money in your 3 days. But it's fucking Steven. How is that even possible that someone would have the arrogance?
Well, that wouldn't be a question that I could answer.
No,
but I would gather that even... with all of that, it's sort of like, well, nobody else would even be allowed to be millions of dollars over budget. But it might have been more like Spielberg yelling at the rest of them.
Okay.
That might have been more the way it was happening.
Here's a question. Yeah. Do you storyboard out you and your fucking coffee? So you know what shots you're going to get.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was one of the things Dean and I worked on, too. We went to lunch at Conrad's in Pasadena, which is a great diner.
I love Conrad's.
Yeah.
I've been there.
And we just sat there, and he pulled out these sheets of paper and just started, well, here you start with your hero shot right here, you see, and then maybe you could do a wide shot that shows that, like, he's just, it's amazing.
You are so lucky.
Yeah.
That's an incredible experience.
Incredible experience. And from
what an education.
Yeah.
And you took it.
It's really cool.
Okay, here's my pitch for you and your fucking coffee.
Oh, please.
Because this just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no, you weren't there this year. I have an annual Easter thing, right?
I was not able to attend the Easter
egg hunt. I have a girl, she's 9, and so every year we have this egg hunt. So now you have to understand, the morning of the egg hunt, this is very LA. I have sent out the Evite 2 weeks in advance, okay? Six people say they're coming. How many people text me Easter morning and say they've changed their mind?
Like, six.
No, the point is another 12 or 15 people.
Oh, that are now coming. Okay.
Yeah. In other words, the party I thought was going to be 10 is 25 people, and it's all happening now. I've got 60 eggs that have to be hid in the courtyard, and the numbers in them, and they correspond with these gifts, and my daughter is shouting, and she's crazy, and the little kids.
You
and
need an AD for this.
There's one-year-olds, and they're six-year-olds, and they're nine-year-olds, and I'm setting up this table, and I'm in this apartment, and so it's, nothing is convenient. Nothing is easy. My kitchen is just like Henry's kitchen, by the way. And anyway, so I'm down. I'm trying to entertain people, or, you know, hello to the parents, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going up and down the steps, up and down the steps, and I say, hey, can I get you guys anything? I've just brought out lemonade for the children. And of course, one of the moms says, do you have any coffee? And I say, yeah.
Of
course.
Off-put sort
here
of.
We go.
Yeah.
All right. So now I got to go up and I got to make the fucking coffee. And one of the containers is empty. So I got to get a new container. And then I pour off the foil and the coffee sprays. And I finally get it in the thing, but I can't use the water from the faucet because it's not that good of water. So I got to go and wait for the water in the refrigerator, which takes forever to
boil. Oh, yeah.
I swear to God, somebody's going to die.
No, I understand that. Except that what I don't understand from your story or from your story is why anybody said, yes, I'll make you coffee. I'd be like, no, I don't have any fucking coffee.
That's the thing about it is there's a
7-Eleven somewhere.
If you watch the episodes, you can see it in their face that they want to say no, but they just are nice people.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not nice.
Well, they're hospitable. They're hosting. They would like to please, but it's not too much that you're going to say no.
It's not like you said, can I get root beer with ice?
Yeah.
Or can I get something that seems impossible? Because really most people do have coffee.
Yeah.
I understand, but coffee has a lot of accoutrements like the sugar and the creamer.
Yeah,
and you got to make it, and it's going to be in one thing, but you can't drink it out of what you made it in.
It was just a nightmare, and I wanted to say, you know, this is about the fucking children. You know
what
I mean?
Why didn't you say that? It's like,
let's move on to Henry's
Kitchen. Wait, hang on. Can I say just one thing about this? This is reminding me of a story. I'll make this quick. I'm in Germany with my mother. We go to see her aunt, Tanta Hilda.
Tanta Hilda.
So this is my great aunt. She's like 90,000 years. I don't know. She's old. And we go, and you know, of course, if you visit anybody in Germany, let alone an old person, they have to give you coffee and cake. So she has these tarts she made, the Kaffee und Kuchen, and she asked through my mother, "Do you want some whipped cream on there?" And I'm like, just trying to get the afternoon over with. I'm like, sure, put some whipped cream on there. She goes in the kitchen. She's gone for like 10 minutes, and we're like, what the? Did she break a hip? I go in there. She's fucking whipping cream by hand.
Wow.
She poured whipped cream into a cup and she's got a whisk.
That's hilarious.
And her ancient. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't even like whipped cream.
Yeah.
I didn't even want whipped cream. I was
just saying,
further the conversation, yes, I'm yes anding. For God's sakes, I made a 100-year-old woman whip cream by hand.
Oh, You've hit a nerve.
Well, yeah. Yes. And if you watch the show, there's a lot of attention to the paid to, like, both parties are sort of like I'm actually asking politely, and I'm completely fine if they don't want to, but they don't want to say no. It's that kind of situation. Yeah. It's sort of, like,
I know. And I think that woman, I think it would have been okay. Yeah. If you had said no, she would have been okay. And if she wasn't, then fuck her.
The other thing that's funny within the series is that you really don't have much dialogue. You're just watching this.
It just all unfolds around
you.
You
just walk in, cause trouble, and leave.
Yeah, I'm just sort of the reason for it. Well, the latest episode, I don't know if you know, saw episode 7. It just came out last week. It's a period
piece.
The Hindenburg one. It's basically I'm a guy manning the mooring mast of the Hindenburg, and I decide I'm going to go get coffee, and then all the shit goes down.
Did Dean direct that, or did Dean shoot that one?
Yeah.
That is so great.
There's a lot of special effects and stuff. So
and it's all in black and white.
Yeah.
And where'd you get the uniform?
The uniforms, Jash was the production company, so they paid for all of that, which is really cool. Yeah. And again, and Dean was not the cinematographer. The DP was a guy named Carlos Medina.
How big
Dean,
is this crew, usually?
Dean took over anything of the director's job that was visually oriented, and I just worked on the comedy of it.
Wow, yeah. That's brilliant. But, that's so the best part.
How many what?
How big is the crew usually?
It's pretty big. You know, I mean, there was when we did that Hindenburg episode, there were probably about 15 people on the crew that I can think of offhand.
These people are being paid.
Yeah.
Which in LA
Jash, raises money from sponsors and they use it to make stuff. It's
pretty
like
cool. Business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
What?
Except for
show business.
The most of the people that create the content aren't doing it for any kind of financial return. Like I'm just doing it because I like to direct. It's an idea that I probably never would have been able to. Like, the kitchen things cost me about $5 each one.
Yeah, let's talk about Henry's Kitchen, which is so humorous because it's not that far off the mark.
Yeah, no, I try to make it. It started like a troll video.
What's that mean?
Well, I guess that's the term for like
making fun of another show.
How would you define a troll?
It's, you mean,
like
a troll on the internet?
Yeah, when you're commenting,
people who show up and say,
people,
I hate Storyworthy, I've listened to 500 episodes and every one of them sucks. That's a troll.
Well, what I was thinking is more like somebody who's saying an opinion that's just there to piss people off.
Oh, okay.
Or just trying to fool people into thinking that they actually believe that or whatever, you know?
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
So my kitchen videos started as like, I want people to stumble on my kitchen video and think that it's just a regular one and all of a sudden realize they've been fooled.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a Borat.
Like a prank.
A little bit, but nothing.
A little bit like that.
Because it's so earnest.
But it eventually turned into like just, it's like, all right, well, this is just, it has an audience of comedy fans. So I'm like, all right, well, it is a comedy then. And so then I do.
Actually, that's what Phil Henry does.
Bit more
it's like he convinces people these calls are real.
Yeah, or baiting or trolling or whatever. Yeah.
But what's so clever about Henry's Kitchen is not just that you're always cooking for one. Well, you have a couple of dates, I know, on the show that come over.
Yeah.
But it's also what you're making. You make very complicated things.
Yeah.
Like, who makes gnocchi? How do you say that?
Gnocchi.
You called it gnocchi, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, gnocchi. It's, I later found out it's pronounced gnocchi.
Gnocchi?
G-N-O-C-C-H-I. And I guess it was, I'm trying to remember what the hell it was. Potato stuffed.
It's kind
noodles,
of a cheese.
It's like a dough.
Isn't it like a noodle stuffed with potato or something? Just something to kill you. It's some Italian thing that will kill you.
Yeah, if you,
soon.
If you look at the video, you'll see, and my dad's in that video.
Yeah, that's the one.
He ends up sitting on my gnocchi.
That's right. He sits on it because you put it down to go get the water or the wine or something, and you come back and your father has sat in it.
That's
There's
hilarious.
Also one that I really enjoy. You have a date and you decide to make her sushi.
Yeah.
But you...
Nikki Glaser,
right. And you make... remember that you're not supposed to heat up the chicken, or excuse me, you're not supposed to heat up the
Yeah, it's supposed
fish.
To be raw.
So you take out the fish, then you put the rest in the oven.
Because she has a problem with eating raw fish, so I go and recook the fish.
Recook it. And so one of the things that's so funny about Henry's Kitchen are the bubbles that come up, like the word bubbles that come up.
Yeah.
So that one of those word bubbles was reapply tuna bits.
yeah. Which is complete nonsense. Yeah, like anybody who... You know, the problem with making the sushi was that, I mean, because people usually laugh when you fail at the kitchen. If you buy all the correct ingredients and do everything according to the way it's supposed to be, it's going to come out good. And I was like, wow, I'm trying to make a joke here, but I'm making sushi and it's coming out great. And I'm just making an instructional video. So I had to kind of go back and do it again. And I... like overstuffed it and I used a butter knife to cut it and then everything fell apart.
Cooking is hard.
It really is.
But some of those, some of the other word bubbles I'm thinking of, it'll come out, just say, beat it. Beat it hard.
Yeah.
It's just stuff that keeps the jokes coming on and on. So you're able to pack in a lot of material in a very short period of time.
I have a soundtrack album now. It's called Jose Suicidio.
Yeah, Jose Suicidio.
Let's get suicidal.
I wanted to ask you about that. So is Jose one of your alter egos, as it were?
Yeah, it's my alter ego who writes really depressing songs that accompany these cooking videos. Well, one of the things when I was watching Real Ones to kind of get the idea of it, the music that people use on their homemade cooking videos
are so depressing.
Yeah, it's depressing, dramatic. It's just
like they're cooking for the hungry or something.
Exactly.
Like they're solving a world problem.
Yeah, it's really and the graphics are depressing and everything about it. So that's what I'm really trying to play up. And so I have this artist, Jose Suicidio, who writes all the music.
Do you go
and
out?
A soundtrack album for it now.
Yeah, do you play?
Awesome.
And you can get that on henryphillips.com and also on iTunes.
Yeah.
Do you go out and play as Jose Suicidio?
No, I've never done that. I have done a couple. If enough people request the songs, I'll do that. But it's really kind of a joke that only appeals to people that are familiar with that.
And that's your fifth or sixth album. You have On the Shoulders of Freaks. You have Number Two. Why Haven't I Heard From You?
Mm-hmm.
And L.A. Dream.
Yeah. So I have four live albums for my comedy act. And
now Jose Suicidio.
Jose Suicidio.
Henry Phillips, you've got a lot of content, man.
Thanks. You know, it's
thrilled.
Good to be putting stuff out there because it makes you feel, I don't know, it distracts you from depression.
Well, listen, you're just original and you're funny and you're original. And I'm really
Thanks.
Happy you came. Hey,
Thanks,
you want to play some Shotgun Story Ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
The wheel landed on virginity. Okay, I can tell you exactly, I can still remember exactly the circumstances of me losing my virginity. I was in the back of, my dad had this ridiculous Chrysler Fifth Avenue, and it was cherry red, and I was in the back seat of that, and I was with my sweetheart at the time, and we were listening to this song from Gotye, I think it was. It was called Now You're Somebody That I Used to Know or whatever. And it was playing on my Spotify. I had Spotify at the time. It was on my iPhone. But it was just an amazing time, and I don't think I'll ever forget it.
Yes. The theory must have happened within the past 3 years. I just assume you won't forget it.
You know what? We've played Shotgun Storyworthy. I shit you not. We've played Shotgun Storyworthy, what, 350 times?
No, many more
That's
times.
That's only the second or third time anybody's ever had me going.
No, the only other false
Fortunately,
story
I have a joke about it, a pre-existing joke that I was able to pull out.
You Sorry, did a honest. Really good job on that.
No, Adam Carolla is the only other guy who started to tell a story, and you're like, this isn't because he started to tell a story about growing up in a small town in Indiana, you know, working on the farm, and then we're like, you didn't work on a farm.
Yeah,
I mean, wait a minute.
He's fucking quick, man. Have you been on Adam's show?
No.
You ought to be on Adam's show.
Wait. I was on his... his radio show.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, on KLSF.
One
of those networks. Yeah.
That was probably almost 10 years ago.
You should get on his podcast too, because he'd love you to death.
One of my all time favorite jokes.
Remember, okay. Which one?
It was about, I won't finish it, but, you know, you were going through a breakup and she.
You
had
it?
A difference of opinion.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to get to know myself. I wanted to get to know my inner child, and she wanted to fuck a guy named Todd.
I forgot about
that joke.
Henry, here's what I see for Henry's Kitchen. I would like to see you do like an alcoholic beverage, like gin slushies or
that
something
cool.
Something special. Like,
you with the gin slushies.
That is a good
idea. She loves gin slushies.
I love gin slushies.
St. Patrick's Day. I always try to attach it to an event, like a holiday. But it doesn't matter because I'm always like, well, then next year will be St. Patrick's
Day.
I'll promote it.
But a July 4th one, I'm sure will be
great.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. By the way, what do you mean I love gin slushies? What does that even mean?
I mean,
that sounds like an accusation.
I know. First of all, how many times have you seen me drink gin slushies?
Oh, no, it's not drinking them. It's making them. You like to make them, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
But at Christmas parties, and that's like...
gin slush puppies.
How about this?
That's what I'll call them.
Henry's Home Decor, where you go to Ross Dress for Less,
yeah.
And you get pillows, throws, rugs, yeah. lamps, and you show us
Could
how
open
to decorate.
A whole new thing. I also thought about having a yard sale. That might be interesting, and just have a bunch of trash.
And how to have a yard sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, this is an idea that I think people could actually do. If anybody does this out there, please send me an email of chronicling the whole thing with a video. But so I live right around the corner from the Mint, mm-hmm. which is a rock club. And there's yeah. always bands going in and out, you know, striking the set and then loading up and everything. Yeah. And it happens all night long because there's a different band every hour. And yeah. there's a lot of chaos there. Recently, I had a bunch of large item trash that I had to get rid of. And I, you have to call the city and then it sits out there and, you know, it's a big pain. But I was thinking, what if, like, you know, for example, I want to get rid of this mattress. What if I just went to the Mint and went to the parking lot and while everybody's loading stuff on and off, what if I just, like, my buddy and I were just like, all right, let's bring this mattress and we just go and put it on their stage.
Yeah.
And then leave.
Yeah. Nobody's going to say anything.
It's not
going
to be until 1 a.m. that they're cleaning up and they're just like, what's this mattress doing here?
This oddly stained mattress.
The last thing they're going to think is that somebody was trying
right,
to get
they're gonna
rid of
it. Right. They're going to blame
their,
it on the last band.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, those fuckers will never
so
work here again.
I guess
again.
What I'm saying is if you live near a rock club and you need to get rid of some bulky trash items, yeah. try just putting it
right,
on their stage
but I see
during
this
the breakdown.
And sure. I think you could even do it in different facets, you know, mm-hmm. Like a regular store or any
yeah,
public place.
Yeah, go into like, the parking lot of a Vons or something like
just,
that. Yeah.
Just take mattresses.
Yeah, you
not
know
just
what?
Mattresses
I just
either.
Realized stores don't. Will never stop you from bringing things in.
Yeah. I know. Sometimes
they'll have to stop you from taking things out. But
right.
if you're delivering,
yeah. like, let's say,
oh, I'm delivering this broken
yeah,
desk.
There you
yeah,
go.
Let's say I'm going to return something. If I have something in a bag and I'm returning it, when I walk into the store, I always want to kind of look around like, I already bought this. As you see, I'm returning it. I'm not
That's
going into the store and walking.
Guilt. Here.
I know. I know it is. But it's kind of that feeling where.
Are you from the Midwest? I thought I always left for this from
well,
the South.
We have this. No, we have a discussion. She's from Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's
which she
right.
thought was for the East, and I finally convinced her it's really the Midwest.
I'm from the East Coast.
Oh, it is, yeah. I mean, well, you're right on the border of Ohio, right?
Yeah, it's the Ohio Valley. It is Midwest, but except for the fact that...
The people I know from Pittsburgh, the comics, I think of them all as Midwest people.
Yeah. Very much so. Mark
More
Eddy.
Than back East.
Mark
yeah.
Eddy is another kind of
oh,
guy
yeah.
who uses his guitar a lot, and he's a
There's
great
There's a lot of great comics out of Pittsburgh.
Frank Nicotero. Yeah,
Jesse people. Joyce. Is one that comes to mind right away. Mm-hmm.
Frank Nicotero is one of my
oh, cool.
dear friends.
Yeah, it was Frank. Yeah, people don't understand how long Pennsylvania is. I once rode a train.
Wide. I think it's called wide, not long.
It's like
California's
six
long.
Dollars.
Well, you know, that's
six
what the ladies tell me.
6 hours.
No. It's like
it's
8 hours. I rode
drive.
A train
Pennsylvania
once
Turnpike.
From one end
it's more
to the
than
other.
That, yeah.
I think it's like 8 hours.
Yeah. It's
oh,
one
is it
of
8 hours?
One of the longest states
from
I've ever ridden through
one,
in my life.
I think to exit 30. I lived off exit 4, so you see how far west I was.
Yeah.
Boy.
I was on the plane.
This is podcast gold, yeah.
I was flying... I guess we were flying back to LA and I was talking to this girl next to me and she said, where are you from? And I said, I'm from LA. And she goes, ew, which is so rude. You know, it's like yeah. people only feel comfortable doing that if you're from LA, any place yeah. else. And I said, well, where are you from? And she said, I'm from Allentown, Pennsylvania, which I had driven through.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that Billy Joel has a song about how shitty of a town
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Industry.
Like, I
want to
be like, there's a hit song about how awful your city is, and you're saying, ew.
They're tearing
about
all the factories down.
Where there's palm trees and beaches and all this
yeah.
stuff. But, you know, and
people are very
jealous. I don't even necessarily want to say she's not entitled to her opinion, but who says ew, really? It's like even. People, I feel like if there's ever going to be peace on earth, it's going to be because right wing Bible Belt people and left wing hippies from Berkeley all agree that they hate LA equally. And they'll be like, hey, peace, brother. We hate those assholes.
Yeah.
And it's like all like Southern hospitality is out the window as soon as you say you're from LA.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, we don't do things the way y'all do out there.
And they don't have any idea because
like,
they've never been
do?
Here.
Yeah.
It's these opinions of New York and LA are formed entirely through television.
Oh, absolutely.
And people think that LA is just like
flaky.
If you go to Beverly Hills or you go West Hollywood, you'll see what is stereotypically that's LA. It's only there. You go to Burbank and you're like, am I in Alabama?
Let
I don't know
you
where
something.
I am.
Does that make it hard for you? Because I know you're on the road a lot, Henry, and you travel all the time. Does that make it hard for you to leave LA?
Sometimes the weather does, you know. There's a part of me that likes it because I'm only there for like a week. But I was just in New York about a month ago, and the weather was, it was the one week that they had that was the worst of the year. And it was like -9 degrees or something like that. And the wind was just blowing right in your face. And then there were a couple of times that like, after the temperature finally rose a little bit, there was rain and it was like buckets of water being dumped on me. Now, remember, I spent the first 8 years of my life in New York City and then another few years in Englewood, New Jersey. But I remember that. But
when you were a little kid, it was pretty hard to take. Were in New York.
Yeah.
You didn't get any New York accent, though.
Yeah, we were 100th in Riverside. I had it, but we moved early enough that it all went away.
You went to elementary school there then.
I went to elementary school in New York, and New Jersey, Englewood, New Jersey, PS75 in New York, and then,
What's that mean, PS75?
Public school.
Public school. That's how much they care about the
That's so weird because I would always hear that in movies or TV.
It was like Emily Dickinson. It's like, they're like, all right, if you want a name, we'll give you a freaking name. It's Emily Dickinson, but it's PS75.
Yeah, and there's like, what, 1,000?
Yeah.
At least you want... Yeah,
one time I was at a bar and I met a guy, we were talking, and he went to PS75 also.
Wow, that is crazy, man.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we got to wrap it up.
There's at least 74 other ones.
That's right. Yeah. Listen, thank you again so much for coming.
Absolutely.
What a blast.
Thank you, guys.
What a blast.
I
want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Andrew Stephen. Thanks, Andrew. And of course, Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen. And of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
He went to PS 512.
And there's 511 of them.
And on behalf of our storyteller, one more time, thanks, Henry.
Thank you, Henry. We really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you guys very much.
And on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.